It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Having grown up in Pittsburgh and taken my fair share of buses up Forbes Avenue from downtown to Oakland at rush hour, I know just what a slog that commute can be. My years of taking the now defunct 73 Highland Park go farther back than I care to say, but it's been at least that long that the city has looked at ways to make the ride faster and more cost-efficient. There's been plenty of talk about putting a rail line in, but in the past week, the movers and shakers in Pittsburgh have turned their lonely eyes to Cleveland for a possible alternative to that plan. Pittsburgh's government and business leaders toured Cleveland's Health Line last Thursday. Among them was Chris Sandvig, Regional Policy Director for the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group, and he joins us now by phone. Chris Sandvig, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, Paul. Thank you for having me on again.
Oh, it's our pleasure, and we're glad to have you. And if our listeners have a comment or question for our guest, you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Have you ridden Cleveland's Health Line? What did you think of it? Do you think it would work in Pittsburgh? And what modes of rapid transit have you experienced elsewhere that you think would work here? Call us at 412-246-2002. That's the number to call. Chris Sandvig, for those who haven't been to Cleveland lately, what is the Health Line and how does it work?
Sure. Thanks, Paul. So the Health Line is what is referred to as a bus rapid transit or an on-street BRT type line. It is unlike normal bus service that we're used to in Pittsburgh. It provides a more rail-like experience within the corridor between downtown Cleveland and what's referred to as University Circle, about 8 or 9 miles in total length. And it has stations along that way. You're able to board the bus on every door. You pay before you get on the bus as opposed to when you get on the bus, much like you would at a station on the T. And travel along the corridor is much more predictable. Service is much more reliable. It's a much higher quality service than what you would typically get, say, on my Highland Park bus, which is the 71A. There were about 60 of us that went to Cleveland last week. There's actually been a large group of us that has been working on this issue of bringing premium transit to the Oakland to downtown corridor now for a couple of years, looking at bus rapid transit. And for those of your listeners who recall us being on in February talking about transit-oriented development, our recently released study showed that this corridor is screaming for what's referred to as premium transit within the Oakland and the downtown connection. Premium transit being something along the lines of bus rapid transit or something like rail within the corridor.
And I think to an extent you've just explained this, Chris, but for our listeners who are trying to wrap their minds around this, who think that a bus is a bus, what would BRT or a bus rapid transit line do that Pat buses cannot do? How does it work?
Sure. So in much of the Cleveland corridor, and I'll use that as an example, and for those who are interested, there is a National Bus Rapid Transit Institute that provides a lot of information on these. In the Cleveland corridor, the buses had dedicated lanes for a large portion of the ride from downtown to University Circle, the Euclid Avenue corridor. Those dedicated lanes were for just the buses only, but those buses also had priority signals at the stoplights and were able to go a little bit quicker than the single occupancy vehicles within the corridor along the line. There were also, like I said, real stations here. So the bus pulls up, you board it just like you would a train. It's level boarding, they call it. So the station is at the same level as the bus floor. All three doors on their buses open up. The buses themselves are actually a much higher quality vehicle than what you would normally see on a bus line. They have a rail-like look to them. They provide for bicycle storage within the vehicle itself. There's actually a bicycle lane the length of the corridor as well. But even in the areas where the bus cannot have its own dedicated lane, the bus still has signal prioritization and a much different look and feel so that you know you're on something different here. This is not just your basic city bus. This is something that has a presence, something that is tied to and coordinated with their own rail systems. They have a couple of rail lines within Cleveland as well. And it just provides a much better experience for the rider overall. And it's really spurred a lot of investment within the corridor.
The consensus we're hearing from people like County Executive Rich Fitzgerald and others is that this project has transformed the part of Cleveland that it runs through. How was the area transformed?
Sure. So there has been several billion dollars of investment within this corridor in terms of revitalization as a result of the BRT line coming in. But the one thing I think that people need to understand with this is this project was not approached just as a transit project. You know, too often, and this is one of the things we at GoBurg, which is housed at PCRG, have been advocating for, is, you know, too often whenever we put a line on a map that we want to put a new transit route in, whether that's rail or bus rapid transit, there's a planning that goes on by the agency and there's discussions going with the community, but real intensive coordination is vital to making that development occur. The corridor has been transformed, but it took partnerships and collaboration from all sorts of actors, much like in Allegheny County and Cuyahoga County, where Cleveland resides. The transit agency can only go so far in that. So what else needs to occur there? That's the redevelopment agency that comes on board, the city that changes zoning, the community development corporations within the corridor, the land bank that they have prioritizing land assembly within the corridor to really make this a community development transportation project as opposed to a point A to point B project. And that's how you got the investments that you saw along the line.
We're talking with Chris Sandvig, Regional Policy Director for the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group, about Cleveland's BRT, Bus Rapid Transit. Would it work in Pittsburgh? It's something that officials in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County are looking at and certainly applauding what has happened in Cleveland. If you've had a chance to ride Bus Rapid Transit in Cleveland or somewhere else, we'd like to hear from you. What ideas about rapid transit make sense to you and you think would work in Pittsburgh? 412-246-2002, the number to call to join the conversation with our guest, Chris Sandvig. And so if, Chris, the idea going forward was to put something like this in Pittsburgh, what would the plan of action be and how and where would it be put into place?
And the Port Authority is undertaking a study that's required by the federal government to be eligible for federal funds for this. It's called an alternatives analysis. And we're part of a fairly large stakeholder advisory committee to that. Sustainable Pittsburgh has been the lead in coordinating that stakeholder advisory committee. Right now, they're looking at alignments within the corridor, what the possibility is for changing this to a bus rapid transit corridor, what the challenges are associated with them, and there are many. Beyond that, we get into engineering studies, but also really to make this work, if we're looking to see, you know, premium transit occur in this corridor and do what it did in Cleveland, you know, stronger partnerships between the public sector agencies that are responsible for development and zoning, as well as the nonprofit and private development arms and job creation arms to prioritize that side of the investment within this needs to occur as well. Cleveland RTA, their transit agency, had well over 1,000 meetings over the course of several years as they were getting things going in their study. So there are a number of steps that are still ahead of us. We're encouraged with what has been happening so far, as, you know, as being advocates for transit and community-oriented transit like we're seeing here. But there's a lot of steps ahead of us, and we encourage everybody to get involved in the conversation.
412-246-2002 is the number to call if you'd like to get involved in the conversation. Let's go to Jim in Oakland.
Oh, Paul, I love the show. And, I'm blind. And back in 1974, they had something called a sky bus. Leonard Stacy, the politician, was all for it. And it was partially built going from South Hills to downtown. I rode on it one time when it was out for show. But it was opposed by politicians other than Leonard Stacy. And now I was wondering what it would cost to have a system, something like that, built in Pittsburgh, something like the gentleman's talking about from Cleveland.
Well,
the sky bus would have been great, but it was going to go from South Hills to downtown.
Right, and
I remember those days, and Larry Stacey was a good friend of mine. He was all for it, and now other politicians oppose it.
Yeah, Stacey was a former county commissioner. Thank you, Jim, for the call, and your reference to Stacey, the former county commissioner under the old system where there were when there were county commissioners, and now we have one county executive, who, of course, is Rich Fitzgerald, who was with our guest Chris Sandvig in Cleveland. Let's talk about cost, because there is a distinct difference between what it would cost to do the rail line type thing, which Skybus was, and the BRT or Bus Rapid Transit.
Sure. There is a vast difference in the price tag as we're looking at right now. Light rail could be $1 to $3 billion with a B within this corridor, largely because of the fact that it is or rail these days. Even if you're just looking at basic surface light rail, a rule of thumb is about $100 million a mile for something like that. BRT within this corridor, what we've looked at is sort of your lower, what I'll refer to as bus plus, which is a lot of the operational improvements that come that you can get with BRT versus say the top end. The gold standard for BRT, and those can range between $100 to $220 million within the corridor. Now, the key difference here, though, is again the politics that I think Jim touched on. Is there's been a lot of effort being put to make sure that whenever something like this is being pushed forward now, it's not necessarily tied to an elected official agenda. It's tied to a community at large, and there's other elected officials as well. Skybus collapsed for a number of reasons. Ironically, the system we have is actually, in some cases, the residue of Skybus, if you look at the busways and T and where they are versus that original plan. But the real thing here is the cost difference is significantly less than light rail, but the opportunities that it provides can be similar.
Buses from downtown to Oakland go right through part of the Hill District. You talked about the transformative aspects of BRT in Cleveland. What could this do for the Hill?
For the Hill, if the bus rapid transit is coordinated properly with other bus services, accessibility to jobs, to training, school, medical facilities, can be enhanced with bus rapid transit or with light rail in either case, you know, depending on which, you know, either mode can do that. But the key really is, again, going back to the coordination side of things. We need to think about this in terms of something other than just the new transportation asset, but what it really means to the community. And those connections to the community, particularly in the case of the Hill, can be enhanced dramatically. But it's important that those concerns and those opportunities be understood clearly in the process.
We have a tweet from CJ on Twitter. He comments that Pittsburgh's topography demands a hanging train system like the one in Germany known as the Schwebebahn. Has there been talk about a hanging train system, Chris?
There's a conversation that comes up occasionally. I would say not necessarily in this corridor. I know there's some discussion about something like that, again, in the Hill, this time connecting potentially the Hill to the Strip District. Portland has a gondola that connects their medical center to their streetcar line, and it's been wildly successful. But in this corridor in particular, that hasn't been considered.
And one of the things that CJ brings up that's important to look at is Pittsburgh's topography. What would Pittsburgh have to do differently than Cleveland did? Cleveland, in particular, the area that this BRT goes through or Healthline goes through, it's relatively flat compared to the hilly area of Pittsburgh, and particularly that downtown to Oakland corridor where those buses going from downtown are going mainly uphill until they get to Oakland and it flattens out. So what would have to be done differently in Pittsburgh?
You're absolutely right, Paul. There's a lot of things that need to be considered here. It's just focusing on the topography for a moment. You know, the other thing about the Euclid Avenue corridor is the street is much, much wider than Forbes Avenue is, much, much wider than Forbes or Fifth through Uptown. And in the areas where the system has dedicated lanes, they have a number of parallel streets, in fact, some that are of higher capacity, that let the city give the transit authority access to dedicated lanes within that area. In fact, they modeled Euclid Avenue, taking all the traffic off of it to prove there was enough capacity in the rest of the system to handle that. We only have 5th and 4th. And so taking another lane away in Oakland and two lanes away in Uptown potentially could have some ramifications in terms of mobility and congestion. You have to consider the cars within that corridor. You are going to get some people out of their cars and onto the buses. But really, particularly as the corridor continues to grow, how are we going to manage that traffic growth? How are we going to determine how we set up parking or a shared parking system similar to what they did in Cleveland here? And where does it go? And how does it support transit as opposed to take away from transit? The other things that we need to consider here is this corridor, and I apologize for the noise. My signal is only good outside.
I understand.
Give me one second here. The other thing to consider is this corridor has extremely high ridership already. It's about 68,000 daily riders through this corridor. If you were to consider that as a light rail line right now, it would be the 4th or 5th highest ridership in the country of a light rail line. Can we get, additional riders into the buses with bus rapid transit? The health line, its ridership is about 18,000. So, they're already at a lower ridership. And then, so those are the things that we really need to consider going forward. But also I think we need to consider going forward is this really the best fit for Pittsburgh? Is this where we should put all of our resources and be done with it? Or is this really the stepstone on the way to something of a higher transit utilization within this corridor that leads to maybe a different transit mode 10 years down the road or something along those lines?
Let's take one last call for our guest, Chris Sandvig, Regional Policy Director for the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group. We have David on the line from Oakland. David, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. I wanted to point out that the numbers that are being handed out by the Port Authority on costs for rail have been falsified for a number of years. They've claimed, for example, the busways cost 20%. Of the cost of rail to reuse a rail line, and it's been actually the opposite. We were able to demonstrate that in a court case. We were challenging the airport busway. Their claims have been way out of line. The other thing is that at 15,000 riders a day is the break-even point where light rail begins to become much more efficient than the bus transit.
David, let me jump in. What are your figures based on?
Figures are based on national figures that we had in our cases. We're back in the 90s when we were challenging the airport busway. My mentor in the case was Deputy Secretary Ed Tennyson, who was the person who killed Skybus and forced the Port Authority to put the T in when they didn't want to. There's been an aversion to rail in Pittsburgh ever since the formation of the Port Authority. And that was done in order to create the proprietary technology for Westinghouse to make a lot of money when they couldn't compete with General Electric in the electric rail market.
And David, just to clarify, when you talk about bringing a case, who is it that you are talking about? Who are you working with or for?
Well, we had several citizens that we had a case that we were looking to actually put rapid rail all the way to the airport into downtown Pittsburgh at the time for the same cost as what was used on half of the airport busway route.
So these were private citizens that simply got together and so we as who exactly?
Yeah. Well, it was myself. I was the lead plaintiff. We had a number of property owners in Crafton and along the route that were being adversely impacted by the busway with its fire, with its sound walls, et cetera. We had expert witnesses lined up on the costs, et cetera, that were involved. And it just isn't as expensive as they're saying.
Well, let me jump in. Let's let Chris Sandvig respond to what you're saying, David. What about the information on a cost of rail versus bus, and in particular David's assertion here that the city that citizens in the city of Pittsburgh and the county of Allegheny have been misled about costs?
Sure. First, David, thank you for the call. I would love to talk with you about it more. If you could go to goberg.org and contact me through that, I would greatly appreciate it. Oakland Planning and Development is one of our members, and I'm sure you're familiar with them. In terms of the cost, you know, transportation projects, particularly in the past, you know, we have seen tremendous cost overruns. And I personally have not seen, you know, the final spreadsheets or any of the information, light rail versus, say, buses along the busways. I know that the busways are built to accommodate light rail vehicles, which are much, much, much heavier than buses are, even the articulated buses. And so naturally, from that perspective alone, actually the costs of our busways per mile would probably be comparable in everything else being held equal and perfect, would be comparable to light rail. We've actually been trying to figure out how to get to the east with rail going back close to 100 years now. In fact, if you go back far enough, there's a heavy rail subway plan that was put forward to try and get to East Liberty from downtown. And in terms of the cost that the Port Authority is putting out, you know, we have verified with independent sources in terms of light rail within this corridor. And these are costs coming from planners other than the Port Authority, some of whom actually are advocating for light rail within this corridor, that you're still looking at $1 to $2 billion within this corridor to do light rail. And it really is largely because of a space issue.
And the buses would be, I'm hearing figures like $200 million. Is that right?
Well, remember, again, though, Paul, with bus rapid transit, the $200 million figure is really the, well, sort of the piece de resistance system. So that is the dedicated lanes, the signal prioritization, the actual stations on the street, real-time bus information, the off-board fare collection, as well as streetscape improvements that would drastically improve the street environment within Oakland and downtown. The BRT portion of the Cleveland system, now this was also before cost escalations on things like concrete and steel. Whenever it was done, the entire system cost them about $250 million in the mid-2000s. The bus rapid transit portion of that just in and of itself was about $70
million. So the buses, either way, the BRT, bus rapid transit, sounds as though it would be much cheaper than light rail. We have to wrap this up, Chris, but I want to thank you for taking time to join us. Chris Sandvig, Regional Policy Director for the Pittsburgh Community Reinvestment Group. We appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you so much, Paul. And to everybody, check out goberg.org for more information on transit issues going on in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County.
And we'll provide a link at our website at WESA.FM. Coming up, how will the classification of obesity change the way it's treated? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.